Hello, sports fans, and welcome back to Ball Games and Beyond. I am your host, Evan Groh, and Ball Games and Beyond is brought to you by Sportsnot.com. Do me a favor, head over to YouTube and subscribe and follow to our YouTube channel. Click that notifications bell so you're always getting all of new episodes that are available to you, as well as all the other great video content that we're providing for you guys. Head over to your favorite podcasting platform, click the follow and subscribe button there as well, because we are now available in audio form on all the major podcasting platforms. So please head over there and check that out for me as well. Now, this week's show, I'm excited about this one because this is one of my favorite events of the year. We're going to be talking about the NCAA tournament. And in particular, we're going to be talking about who got snubbed, right? The brackets came out on Sunday. And every year at this time, after the brackets are released, there is always a team or two or three that are unhappy for being left out of the tournament. And this year is no different. There's plenty of teams that believe they have the resume, believe they did enough to earn a spot in the tournament. But unfortunately, the committee saw it differently. So we're going to spend some time talking about biggest snubs in this year's NCAA tournament, as well as some other general stuff about the tournament. We're going to be joined by our guest in segment number two, college basketball insider for the New York Times and NJ.com online. We're going to be speaking with Adam Zagoria, great guest. I follow him on X at Adam Zagoria, and he's got a lot of great content. He is very close to a lot of these teams, especially those Big East teams, and we're going to spend some time talking about that as well. So that's kind of the direction of the show, what you can expect. Before we go out to the guest line and bring Adam in, I do want to just kind of give you a couple of my thoughts on the NCAA tournament here that'll be getting started here in just a couple of days. The tournament is as you know, one of the biggest events in America, really, when it comes to sports. You know, you have the Super Bowl, you have a couple other events, but the NCAA tournament is right there. I saw that they're expecting $3 billion worth of betting to be going on, which dwarfs the number of the Super Bowl, which, you know, the Super Bowl is one game, and we're talking about a number of games here throughout the tournament. But the first couple of days of the tournament, that Thursday and Friday, where there are 16 games being played each day, it's like none other. I cannot think of another day in sports where you have that much excitement and anticipation, where it just brings people together. It brings Americans together. It's the talk of the water cooler. People take the day off from work. They get together at their local watering holes and they watch these games. They fill out their brackets, and it's just a great event here. I'm very much looking forward to it. You know, every year we see this team who nobody knows anything about come out of nowhere. Last year it was Florida Atlantic who made that magical run to the Final Four. Who will it be this year? We'll have to wait and see who that is. But again, the major focus of today's show is NCAA snubs. Now, there's a couple teams out there from the Big East Conference who believe that they should have found themselves in the tournament. I'm talking about St. John's and Rick Pitino. He would have been now the sixth coach had they made the tournament. He would have been the first coach to lead six teams to the NCAA tournament. I would have liked to see them get in. I was following St. John's much closer than I've ever have in the past because of their coach. I would have liked to see them get in. Providence, and they believe they, you know, had a legitimate argument. Kim English not happy about that as well. And then Seton Hall, Shaheem Holloway came over from St. Peter's. He seems to have that program headed in the right direction. They were looking to make their first appearance in the tournament in a couple of years, but none of these teams made it. Unfortunately, what we saw happen was there was some unexpected conference tournament champions. I'm talking about Oregon. I'm talking about UAB. I'm talking about Duquesne, to name three of them. There were five total that stole a bid from teams who otherwise probably would have had an at-large bid. There's some other teams out there who believe they have a legitimate gripe as well. Pitt as well, Indiana State, and Oklahoma, who came out of the Big 12, which was the number one conference in college basketball this year. Unfortunately, they didn't end the year playing as well as they did to start the season. They were 15-3 to start the year. They were ranked within the top 10, but they finished, according to Charles McKellen, the committee tournament chairman, they were the 69th team in the field. Unfortunately, they missed the tournament by one spot, but there's a lot of unhappy people around, and we're going to discuss some of that a little bit more in detail with our guest coming up after this break. You don't want to miss the conversation coming up next on Ball Games and Beyond. And we are back on Ball Games and Beyond, and now it is time to bring in our guest this week. And joining us on the show is Adam Zagoria, college basketball insider for the New York Times, as well as NJ.com online. And Adam, I know it's a really busy week for you, and it's an exciting week for college basketball fans, so I do appreciate you making some time for us this week.
Sure, anytime. It should be a lot of fun, Evan.
Absolutely. So, you know, Adam, I thought you'd be a great guest to bring on the show this week because the main topic of this week's show is NCAA snubs. And because you are based in New York, right there in the city, you cover a lot of these teams who are unhappy that they didn't make the tournament. Of course, I'm talking about some of those teams in the Big East. So I thought you'd be a great person to get some of your insight. But before we get into some of the specifics on some of those teams, I just want to get some of your general thoughts, big picture. Overall, how do you think the committee did in selecting the field of 68 teams?
Yeah, I think they did okay. I mean, you're right. I cover the Big East here. I spent a lot of time around teams like St. John's and Seton Hall, and I can tell you they were not happy last night. I mean, anytime you win 13 games in the Big East Conference, like Seton Hall did, going 13-7, they came in fourth in the league. St. John's in Rick Pitino's first year came in fifth, and both of those teams, both those teams were left out of the field of 68, you know, in favor of some teams like Colorado State and a Michigan State team that has 15 losses. So I think there's a lot of questions, especially in Big East territory, about why those teams got left out. You know, other than that, I think they did well with the top four seeds. Obviously, Connecticut, Purdue, Houston, North Carolina. You know, the first three are the real kind of big three to win the whole thing. I think UConn, which is going to start here in Brooklyn and then maybe go to Boston, you know, it's good for them. Their fans and their team won't have to get on an airplane for the first four rounds before the Final Four. But they do have a pretty loaded region there in the East with four conference tournament champions in their group, including Auburn, Iowa State, Yale, and Illinois, I think.
Correct. Yeah, there were four conference tournament winners in that East region, and I agree with you, and that was something that I wanted to ask you about, so I'm glad you mentioned it there. I don't think the committee did UConn any favors with that region, so they're going to have their work cut out for them should they decide or should they be able to make another run to the Final Four. But I want to get back to the Big East. Were you at all surprised to only see three teams make it from that conference? And, you know, I know there were five teams who unexpectedly stole bids from some of these other teams. But we're talking about the Big East here. We're talking about a team or a conference who has a very rich tradition in college basketball. The Big East Conference has won, or the winner of the NCAA tournament, three of the last seven has come from the Big East. So do you think there was a little bit of disrespect shown by the committee to the Big East?
Yeah, I can tell you I was on Zoom calls last night with both Rick Pitino at St. John's and Shaheen Holloway at Seton Hall. You know, Rick was a little more sort of okay with it. He's like, you know, we're not going to complain. It is what it is. Shaheen was really heartbroken for his players. He called it super disappointing. He said it was disrespectful to the Big East. And from his perspective, you know, it's like, what else is he supposed to do? The guy went 13-7 in the Big East. I believe since the new Big East started, Evan, in 2013-14, 93% of the teams that finished above 500 in the league made the tournament. So now you have two teams, St. John's and Seton Hall, that did that this year and didn't make it. You know, Seton Hall beat UConn by 15 points in December. Now, that was a game Donovan Klingon got injured in. They also beat Providence on the road and Marquette at home. So they've beaten two teams that were a one and a two seed. Now, the committee chair yesterday pointed out that Klingon was hurt when UConn lost to Seton Hall, and also that Seton Hall didn't really win anything in the non-conference. They beat Missouri. They had a, you know, kind of a bad loss to Rutgers. So they're holding that against them. St. John's went 4-10 in quad one games, so they're kind of holding that against them. But just if you look at the eye test in the last month or two, you know, St. John's and Seton Hall have played UConn about as tough as anybody. I mean, St. John's scored 90 points the other day in the Big East semis and lost, and Seton Hall beat them in December. So I know Jim Boeheim is among some people criticizing the committee today, saying, you know, they're relying too much on the net, and, you know, you can schedule bad teams like Kim English. The Providence coach said you could just go out and schedule really bad teams in the non-conference and, in his words, beat the snot out of them, you know, by 40 or 50 points and just pile up your net. And, you know, you're not really paying attention to what's going on the court. So I think it's a rough day for the Big East, a very proud conference. But, you know, hey, maybe they win the NCAA tournament with UConn and they have five teams in the NIT that could really show everybody by winning both tournaments.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought up the comments by Kim English and Jim Boeheim, because that is something that I wanted to get into with you a little bit here. What's your opinion on that? Is the analytics portion of the evaluation, is it a bit, you know, skewed, I guess you could say, where the committee isn't doing enough with the eye test? I mean, we have all this data, KenPom rankings, the net rankings, all of this data that is available, but sometimes I think there just has to be more common sense involved watching the games. Because when I watch St. John's the last, you know, few weeks of the season, they've won 6 of the last 7 games, and the team that I saw on Friday night at the Garden against UConn, that looked like a tournament team in my eyes. So what's your opinion on that? Do you think there's too much emphasis on the data and the analytics and not enough with the eye test?
Yeah, I think that's true in every sport. I mean, I watch a lot of baseball. I'm a big Yankees fan. You know, you can obviously see, I know I'm getting off on a little tangent here, but in baseball, they're relying, you know, way too much on analytics and less on old school, you know, what you see and your gut in baseball. And, you know, we don't really know. It comes down to the 12 people in the committee room making this 68-team field for the selection committee. And, you know, we don't really know what they're relying on, but it appears that they're relying too much on analytics and on the net. And it's like, hey, did you watch these games? Did you see Seton Hall put up 90 on UConn? St. John's? Did you see Seton Hall beat UConn? Did you see what Providence did here? And, you know, are we really leaving those teams out in favor of, you know, not to slight any particular team, but, you know, say a Colorado State or a Michigan State, I believe, has 3 quad one wins, you know, and all these other Big East teams. St. John's had 4, Seton Hall had 5. Seton Hall really should have had 6. Shaheen was pointing out last night, the night they beat Villanova a couple weeks ago in March, it was counted as a quad one win that night. It would have been their 6th quad one win, and then the next day it turned into a quad two win. So he couldn't really understand that. So, you know, it is a little bit too much on the net and the analytics. And Coach Patino said last night we should never mention net again. But, you know, they'll probably go back to it next year. But it is a, you know, it's a bitter pill. Like, I've covered Seton Hall and St. John's all season. These guys are seniors. Some of them, they put in everything they can. They've got some big wins. And it's like, what else are you supposed to do besides win, you know, 13 games in the Big East? What other major conference has a team go 13-7 and not make the tournament?
Yeah, and I saw St. John's, since they've been tracking the net rankings and whatnot, they have the best net ranking, which I believe is 31 or 32 of any team not to make the NCAA tournament. So they certainly have a pretty good case to make for themselves as well.
And then they opted not to play in the NIT, which,
right,
a little surprising. Seton Hall is going to go play, and then it's a question of, you know, can you regroup and get motivated? And as a coach, can you motivate your guys to play in the NIT?
Yeah, and I think I know where you're going to go with this next answer here, but of the three teams from the Big East, I'm talking about Seton Hall, St. John's, and Providence, which one of those teams do you think has the best case against, you know, the committee, you know, for not making the tournament?
I mean, I'm going to go with Seton Hall. I cover them all year. I understand their net, I think, was in the 60s. They didn't have a great net. But most of the bracketologists I talked to, Mike DeCourcy at Fox and Brad Wachtel here in New Jersey, they all had Seton Hall as their highest of those teams that didn't get in the first four out group. I think they had St. John's a little below that and Providence below that. So I think Seton Hall, you know, obviously got hurt by these five bid thieves. It was just an unprecedented weekend where you had all these teams, you know, NC State and, you know,
Duquesne,
Oregon and Duquesne.
UAB, yep.
Yeah, five of them stealing bids. And you could just kind of feel the air go out of the balloon for Seton Hall and St. John's over the weekend. Now, if you ask me which team, you know, is the hottest and could have won a couple games, you know, maybe I'll say St. John's because like you said, you know, Patino made this huge headlines by ripping his players in mid-February when they lost to Seton Hall, said they couldn't defend laterally, they weren't athletic enough. You know, everyone was wondering what was going to happen. And all they did was reel off, you know, six straight wins there, including a win over Creighton at home. So, you know, I talked to Boeheim. He said nobody would want to play St. John's in the tournament, but, you know, we'll never know.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to the committee tournament chairman, Charles McLellan, yesterday, and it was one of the many interviews that he did. And I thought he did a nice job of, you know, kind of talking through the process and defending the process. And you mentioned it. This year was very unique in that we did have the five unexpected teams who stole the bids from teams who otherwise would have had an at-large bid.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I like the emphasis that is placed on winning the conference tournament. I think it adds excitement to the conference tournament games, and it gives teams the added motivation of going out there playing hard to try to win. So I think that's good for the game. What's some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, look, the conference tournaments are a lot of fun. I was at the Ivy League tournament over the weekend at Columbia where you had a team, Brown. I know they lost yesterday in a buzzer beater to Yale, but that's just, you know, that's what March is all about, right? They were 6-17 like a month ago. They won six in a row. They beat Princeton, everybody's favorite to win the Ivy League. They almost beat Yale. And then they would have been in the NCAA tournament with a 14-17 record. And that's, you know, that's exciting. They got hot at the right time. NC State wins five games in 5 days. They beat Duke and Carolina in the ACC tournament. You know, they're coming in red hot. UAB looks like a really dangerous team to me. They win the American, I guess, conference. So, you know, the conference tournaments are a lot of fun. But on the flip side, again, if you're Seton Hall or St. John's, you're kind of like, you know, Shaheen is saying this tournament doesn't even matter. Even if we had beaten St. John's in the quarters and gotten to the Big East semis, it doesn't sound like Seton Hall would have been in anyway because they still would have got beaten out by these five bid thieves.
Correct. That's correct. Yeah, and I did see the first four out, according to the committee, was Oklahoma, Seton Hall, Indiana State, and Pitt. Our guest this week on Ball Games and Beyond is Adam Zagoria, college basketball insider for NJ.com. I just want to go kind of big picture on the tournament here. You know, I think everybody has fun, you know, filling out their brackets, of course, and trying to find that next, you know, mid-major or Cinderella story. We saw FAU last year. We saw teams like St. Peter's a couple years ago. Can you pinpoint maybe one or two or even three teams that people may not be familiar with that they should keep an eye on here as the tournament gets underway this weekend?
Well, I will point out that St. Peter's is back in the tournament, right?
I can see that.
2 years after Shaheen Holloway got them to the Elite Eight, and now it's a good local story here in New York, New Jersey, that Bashir Mason, who's a Jersey City guy, who played for Danny Hurley at St. Benedict's Prep, has St. Peter's back in the tournament, as does his best friend Donald Copeland, who played for Bob Hurley Sr. at St. Anthony's. He has Wagner in the tournament. So it's just kind of a cool story. Those two guys, born on the same day in Jersey City, best friends, both played for the Hurleys and both got their teams in the tournament. Do I think they're going to make a big run? I'm not so sure. I like McNeese State. They're a 12 seed in the Midwest region, coached by Will Wade, former LSU coach who got into a little trouble there with the you know, federal investigation into bribery in college basketball. But he's back. They've got 30 wins. I think they're one of four teams in the bracket with 30 wins. They're in a 12-5 game there with Gonzaga in the Midwest, where a lot of people, I think myself, I know Seth Davis liked McNeese State coming out of that. I think McNeese State could get to a Sweet 16 there as a 12 seed, you know, to play Gonzaga. And then, you know, Samford is a 13 seed playing number four Kansas, which is, you know, they expect to have Hunter Dickinson and Kevin McCullough back, but they're a little depleted. So, you know, maybe you get a Samford upset. Samford's got 29 wins. So those are two teams, McNeese State and Samford, 29-30 wins, that I think have a chance to knock off Kansas and Gonzaga. And then maybe McNeese State makes a run, and, you know, they'll probably run into Purdue there in the Sweet 16. So those are definitely a couple teams to look at. You know, I mentioned UAB before. They're the 13th seed here, I guess, here in the – or I'm sorry, the 12 in the East. They play San Diego State. That East region has three of the four Final Four teams from last year, UConn, San Diego State, and FAU. I like UAB there to maybe pull an upset over San Diego State in the 12-5 game, and then they would potentially play Auburn in the second round.
Yeah, those 12-5 games are always fun to watch. We know the number of upsets that have come out of that matchup. What about Purdue, Matt Painter? They had a disappointing exit from the tournament last year. They got Zach Edey back. They've got a really good team around them. Is it time that Matt Painter and Purdue make a deep run in the tournament this year?
I mean, they sure hope so, right? I mean, look, Zach Edey tested the NBA draft waters last year. I talked to him at the NBA draft combine. And he said, you know, if I do come back, it's going to be with one goal in mind, and that's going to be to, you know, get to a Final Four and try to win a national championship. Look, the Big Ten as a league, Evan, hasn't won an NCAA championship since 2000, you know, when Michigan State did it. Yeah. That's almost a quarter of a century ago. Everybody talks about how great the Big Ten is year in and year out. They put 7, 8, 9 teams in the league. They are a great league. But in the end, you're going to be measured by the number of championships you have, which, you know, the Big East has more, the ACC has more. So this is, you know, Purdue is obviously the league's best chance to win it, although Illinois is excellent.
Very good.
You know, Wisconsin's a very good team. So Purdue, you know, is the one seed there. You got to think they're going to at least win their first game, you know, probably not get upset. But then they're going to have a TCU team probably, which is a very athletic team with a great coach and Jamie Dixon. You know, then they could get either Kansas or McNeese State in the Sweet 16, I guess that would be, and then Tennessee or Creighton in the Elite Eight, and then possibly Houston in the Final Four. So, you know, you got to beat some good teams there. They're gonna have to really beat some good teams, two or three, four teams in a row, to even get to a Final Four, and then they're gonna have to play maybe a Houston and a UConn. But Zach Edey is the best player in the country. It's gonna come down how the guards and the other pieces around him play. But it really is all or nothing for that team this year.
Yeah, you know, we always hear these analysts and pundits talking about the tournament is all about matchups, you know, style of play against teams that maybe you're not familiar with. And now that we have the brackets and we can see who the first round matchups are and some of these potential second and Sweet 16 matchups will be, how many teams do you think have a legitimate shot to win the tournament? Because I know for me, sometimes every year going into the tournament, it seems like, oh, this year is as wide open as it's ever been. But then when the tournament's over, it always seems like there's a Kansas or a Duke or a UConn winning it. Occasionally we'll have one of those other elite teams, not quite a blue blood like a Villanova, who had some success recently. But to me, it always ends up being one of those teams. But how many programs right now you look at have a legit chance to win this year's tournament?
Yeah, that's a great question. Excellent question. I mean, honestly, gun to my head, I really only think there's like three. I think it's UConn, Purdue, and Houston. And if we're sitting here in 3 weeks and one of those teams hasn't won, I'll be pretty surprised. Now, that said, you know, there's other teams that could get hot. You know, Arizona's got a lot of talent, but they've been inconsistent. They lost in the Pac-12 tournament. North Carolina is a very experienced team with R.J. Davis, a fourth-year guard from here in New York, White Plains, New York, who's, you know, maybe the best guard in the country. Armando Bacot's been in college for 17 years, it seems like. You know, they got a really, really experienced bench, a lot of guys, Harrison Ingram. You know, and then you have teams like maybe a Kentucky or, you know, maybe a Marquette, a Tennessee that could get on a roll and win some games. But honestly, to really answer your question, if it's not Houston, Purdue, or Connecticut, I think those three teams have separated themselves, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I agree with you. Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but have you had a chance to fill out a bracket or make a Final Four prediction that you'd be willing to share?
Yeah, I do have my bracket right here. That's one of the first things I do last night just to see what's going on. I have UConn against Arizona in one national semifinal with UConn coming out of that, and then Houston and Purdue on the other side. I have UConn beating Houston in the final. You know, I'm kind of going chalk there. I'm not really picking any big surprises, but I think UConn is the most complete team. You know, I know Jay Billis and some other people have said if you're going to pick one team, it's Connecticut. You know, they've got two of everything almost. They've got a great point guard in Tristan Newton, tremendous shooters. The kid Cam Spencer, who transferred from Rutgers, really maybe is the MVP of the team, kind of is on the same page emotionally and mentally with Coach Dan Hurley, just super competitive, wants to win, can shoot the three. You know, they've got a bunch of guys who can shoot the three, Caravan, Newton, Spencer. They've got freshmen that they bring off the bench who only play a little bit, Jalen Stewart, Solo Ball, who are really talented guys who can inject some energy and enthusiasm off the bench. And then they've got, you know, a monster defensively in Donovan Klingon, 7'2", potential lottery pick, and Samson Johnson, the backup center, is a real rim runner who scores a lot on putbacks and dunks. So they are the most complete team. They are going to have to, you know, probably go through a gauntlet here and, you know, maybe have to beat like an Auburn, the SEC champ, and maybe Iowa State or Illinois, a conference champion, just to get to a Final Four. And then they're going to, you know, probably run into a Arizona or Carolina and then a Houston or a Purdue.
Yeah, and on top of all of the things that you just mentioned, they have the championship pedigree because they just did it a year ago. And it would be the first time that we've had a repeat champion since 2007 when the Florida Gators did it, led by their coach, Billy Donovan. Adam Segoria, thank you so much for the time and your insight. Did you have one more thing there you wanted to add?
Yeah, just, you know, it's worth pointing out that UConn doesn't have to get on an airplane like we said here, Evan. They're going to be playing in New York here for a few days. Presumably they win, they go to Boston. So they're just playing local with all their fans and all their players just being able to stay local. And I wouldn't discount the fact that they don't really have to travel much. That's going to be a big advantage.
Yeah, and when they do travel, they travel well. So even when they got to go out somewhere, I think it's out in Arizona, that region, Final Four maybe, or not Final
Glendale.
Four.
It's in Glendale. Yeah,
Glendale, right. Yeah. So I'm sure their fans will travel out there as well. But do me a favor, go out and follow Adam on X at Adam Segoria and follow his work at NJ.com. Thank you so much for the time, Adam. Enjoy the tournament, and maybe we'll get you on again sometime down the road here.
Thanks, Evan. Great to be with you.